Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. This week, we are running a little behind schedule. It is Wednesday on a normally released Tuesday schedule, but I have been fortunate enough to find some time on Sarah O'Kelly's calendar.
Hey, Chris, good to see you again.
It's been a little while. You always bring great content to the show. And, you know, recently we were at CCF and you facilitated and helped a bunch of solution providers navigate a tabletop exercise. And in reviewing some of the stuff that we got from feedback from that event and talking to some of the solution providers over at MSP Ignite, in fact, they've asked that I put together sort of the same slide deck for a town hall to just talk through some of the key components of a tabletop exercise. And really, we don't even have a plan to do a simulation of any kind. We're just going to talk about definitions and why roles and responsibilities are so important in that planning and putting together a tabletop exercise. But before we get into some of those pieces, Sarah, I thought it would be a good idea, actually per your suggestion, to talk about how do we get to that tabletop exercise? What are the things that we need to think about? And I think to some extent, overcoming the objections around, well, we don't need to do one of those, we're fine. Mm-hmm. And I think even remembering that it doesn't have to be a cybersecurity incident scenario. It could be, you know, fire drills or first person shooter, hurricanes, floods, all kinds of stuff can fall into this, and really understanding things like the responsibility matrix and some of those things. So talk me through a little bit how you approach, like more from the beginning, what gets you started on this conversation that you would have with a client or even internally at Choice Cyber?
So many people approach incident response because they have to. So, you know, depending on what compliance framework that I have a client working with, like a NIST 800-171 or CMMC client, there is specifically a control that says that the incident response plan must be tested on an annual basis.
Sure.
So that's the driving factor for some clients. But really, I think it loses sight of incident response and business continuity or disaster recovery, which are some of those other items that you mentioned. These are really tools to help the business's resilience in times of turmoil. You know, the same as you would have like a backup server for your confidential data to live on just in case something happens. A tabletop exercise is a way to kind of test drive the company's response to an incident or a disaster and kind of test out, not necessarily whether you do all of the steps correctly, but do you understand the order of operations? What is your internal communication during those times look like? Who are the decision makers that need to be at the table? Who's the backup if that decision maker's not at the table? The goal of it is to make sure that if and when an incident or disaster happens, that the team can actually effectively navigate that with as little additional stress as possible. Because we know that they're by nature stressful. It's either your company is in jeopardy, your well-being is in jeopardy. People lose their brain when those things happen. And the way that we future-proof is to practice, you know, the process frequently enough that it becomes a little bit of second nature to us.
So with that in mind, does that get into things like, so we obviously the one, if those of you listening were at CCF, we did one that was talking about ransomware and we were talking about some of the responsibility matrix a little bit. Like it was about a ransomware incident that targeted an RMM vendor, and it was an actual scenario that took place that was out of CISA. But like along those lines, we're talking about at this level from an internal perspective, Who are the people that need to be at the table? So for the exercise, like, fill in the blank CEO or whoever it might be. But then I think to your point, like, if the CEO isn't present, who's next? I mean, even going so far as like thinking about how our governments run here in the US, with thinking about things like if the president's gone, then the vice president takes over. If the vice president takes over, so on and so forth, until you've moved all the way down to like the housing secretary. And but there's a continuous pattern. And for anybody that's ever watched Designated Survivor knows that there's a plan of action to put those different people into scenarios where they aren't at the same place at the same time, so that they can't say, well, yep, the whole leadership team's gone. Right. So,
So creating an incident response plan, which is separate from a policy. So I want to make sure that like folks who are listening understand that your IR plan is essentially your run book. It's the order of operations. Your policy kind of dictates what should be happening, but your IR plan should have a primary and secondary for every step of it. I also highly recommend people including in their incident response plan, who is your contact or your cybersecurity insurance company? Who is your legal contact? Who is
right.
your PR or your marketing person? Because those are all people that we might not think of being IT focused as required for an incident response. But the reality is that quite frequently, those people have a lot of weight that they need to add in terms of like bigger picture, not just the incident, but how is the company presenting it? What is the legal obligation of the organization? Who keeps an eye on the client's contacts? For like, okay, we had something that we reasonably suspect to have been a breach in the data of one of our clients. What is our contractual obligation to notify that person?
Sure.
So these are all people that need to be informed or have representation in an incident response tabletop exercise because they will have that impact when an incident actually occurs.
Let me ask you a question. You made me think about, you mentioned like, notifying insurance or PR or some of those things. It makes me think about like if I was looking at my insurance policy for cybersecurity as an easy one. I shouldn't say easy, but if I was looking at that policy, what are the terms of engagement that I have that I may not be aware of? Things like if we have determined in fact that we have an incident on our hands, what are the steps that come next? Does everybody understand what those steps are? Because as soon as you engage insurance or as soon as you invoke attorney-client privilege, now a lot of things have changed, and a lot of risk has now been potentially added to the equation around your company and the survivability of this event that's taking place.
Yeah, there's a legal obligation that happens when you declare an incident.
Right.
One of the ways that I suggest that clients or MSPs who are holding in cybersecurity insurance proceed with this is to specifically ask their legal counsel and specifically ask the cybersecurity insurance company, do they have a run book that is their suggested process? From the legal standpoint, asking your cyber, or excuse me, your legal contact, what order they suggest. Do they want you to call them first and then the cybersecurity insurance company?
Sure.
But understanding what the impact of that's going to be so that you can then determine at what point in the chain does that decision happen
Right.
and exactly who gets notified in what order. Again, part of your incident response plan, but we generally don't think of that. And frankly, if most companies had an incident tomorrow, there would be a lot of scrambling to figure out who's supposed to get notified first.
Well, it makes me think like one could do, for lack of a better word, a tabletop exercise that just says, how do we communicate because an incident has occurred? So that we're going to go through the scenario. The scenario is really advanced. It's very sophisticated. There's been an incident, and leave it at that. Like we're agreeing that an incident is significant. We're agreeing that an incident requires getting out the playbook, and it requires us to go through the steps in there that say, hey, step one, step two, step three. From where I'm sitting, it sounds like that's something that all organizations should be doing potentially more frequently than once a year, because
Yeah.
things are fluid within an organization. Vendor A and vendor B may not be the same anymore. You may have changed insurance providers since, 45 days ago for whatever reason. Or you've added a new policy that, helps, layer on top of your existing insurance. Maybe you just added a PR reputation rider or something along those lines. So it sounds like one could really boil down a tabletop exercise to, I don't want to call it trivial, but like to just say, hey, we're going to have a tabletop exercise that just looks at the communication plan because an incident has happened,
I mean,
regardless of what kind it is.
you'll test out the ideally if you're running the tabletop exercise correctly, or if you're whoever you're having come in and run it correctly, you'll be testing that conversation process out. Because when you're doing a tabletop exercise as the facilitator, part of your job is to ask questions.
Sure.
So one of my favorites is like, okay, there's an incident. How are you alerting people? And I'll have clients that'll say like, oh, well, we use Microsoft Teams. I'm like, okay, Microsoft's totally down.
Sure.
Well, we call each other. Okay, do you have a phone list?
Yeah, we use Microsoft Teams.
So it's sometimes it's literally kind of coming in like, how are you communicating in this that ha you have a backup option?
Yeah,
Do
this.
you have a second way of reaching people? Do you have a printed copy of your incident response runbook in your office? Because if Microsoft is down, or if your file server is down, and that's where you stored your one copy of your
Yeah.
incident response plan, everything's dead in the water at that point. So some of it is the art of asking the what if.
Sure. And the what if being a realistic what if, because we've all seen, scenarios where Microsoft or Google or somebody's down and that's where we store things. It makes me think about the questions that often get asked if I was client facing, and they're like, so do you use this fill in the blank vendor or service? And I think this is an interesting scenario where, a defendable answer would be like, we don't use that particular vendor because in the event that you were to go down from vendor A, B, or C, we're using a different product or service. Now, this obviously doesn't apply to every product or service, but it's an example of like, hey, we're using fill in the blank service provider for phones or fill in the blank, or maybe we have our region set differently than the majority of our demographic for our end user clients, because that way, if they are impacted, we're the core for all of their activities. And now we're still able to, handle that communication plan or facilitate some things that they may not, which it gets into a lot of opportunity conversation around, well, hey, you know what? You're right. Redundancy is kind of important. Like if you're serious about this, yeah, we can definitely recommend adding a secondary service provider or some things that would allow for, like, in the event that Teams doesn't work or on the blank, there is a plan B option that will function in the event of failure.
Yeah, and it's interesting because a lot of times people don't realize how critical those solutions are that they're using until we say, okay, that's no longer an option for you. How do you conduct business? How long is this going to actually stop your ability to provide services to your clients or to generate income?
Like
How much
how
money is
long
it
can you do
costing you?
without? Yeah, how long can you do without doing those things?
Yeah, exactly. So when we talk about incident response, one of the things we look at is like, what is the criticality of each
Sure.
of these systems? If back in the day where everybody was 100% on site, it would be difficult for a company to be able to recover if they only had one ISP.
Yeah.
So we always used to say, like, do you have a backup ISP? With working hybrid now or working fully remote, which many organizations are doing, there's a little bit more opportunity for redundancy because even if you, Chris, can't get online because there's a disaster in your area, I may perfectly well be able to do that. But it's the process of calling out like, oh, here's actually where the gaps are. And you tease some of that out ahead of time, of course, when we're sitting around theoretically at a table saying like, oh, what are our most critical solutions? But the tabletop is really where we get to see where the holes in that process are.
Yeah, it made me think about you brought up, the work from home, or a lot of the, especially with solution providers today, that whether it was before or because of COVID, the employees all work remotely. And it got me thinking about some of the safeguards that are in the Trustmark CIS and a lot of frameworks. And they talk about, the business continuity of like power's out, flooding, fill in the blank. And I started thinking about like, okay, so if I work from home and my power's out, or I don't have internet where I'm located, what's the plan? Because what if my cell service goes out with that? Like, I'm remote enough. Like, if I don't have power here at my house, I'm probably not getting very good cell coverage because I'm pretty remote. So is it like, is there a in that playbook that says, oh, well, when Chris is no longer able to work from home, his point of contact would be and fill in the blank coffee shop, or that's maybe 5 miles away, but like in my documentation, does it actually have a phone number for the business that's there? Because what if cell service is directly impacted on a much broader scale, but I can get to the internet, or I can get to some things like, I think sometimes we're quick to say, oh, well, I would just go work at the local Starbucks. If you're in an urban setting, there could be like nine Starbucks within a 3 block radius. Which one is Chris at? And is that important as part of your, continuity planning to make sure that people know, like, hey, if I want to get a hold of Chris, and I know that we both work in an urban environment, and he's like, yeah, I'll be at Starbucks, and I don't know which one it is, it may take me a while to go and be at the same location he is, and we may not have that kind of time.
And that's one of the reasons why it's so important to have folks understand who's the backup. If I can't reach Chris and Chris is one of my decision makers, there really needs to be a secondary decision maker that, we have some resilience around. Can the company move on without one
Sure.
person? I think it's a big, we dance around the concept of risk management, but that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about in the tabletop exercise, identifying not just what are the risks to the business if something goes down, which really ideally should be done ahead of time and
Sure.
as part of your business continuity program. But we're also looking at like what is the risk of some of the pieces falling apart? Do we have a single point of contact for something? Do we have only one person that has access to the admin panel? These are the kinds of things that a tabletop exercise can tease out. Again, the important piece here is the facilitation, because anybody can just run the, if you look at this as a tabletop exercise guides,
Yeah.
there's all of these, this is what's happening in this order, but then you get into these juicy nuggets of here are the questions to ask, here are perspectives to contribute to it. And so I think somebody who's got a little bit of practice with that, especially somebody who's got some good facilitation skills, so they're kind of stepping their own opinions back and letting the group actually make the decisions and be guided in the right direction, can really make this a really impactful business opportunity.
So, we've got about 12 minutes or so, and I thought it'd be a good idea to talk through some of the definitions, and specifically, not just the definitions, but sort of the rules within doing a tabletop exercise. And I think there's a lot to unpack, with regards to the different roles and responsibilities with some of the things that we've talked about up until this point. So there's basically four roles based on some of the things that came from CISA in the exercise we did, and obviously there could be more, but the sort of the categories are going to be the players, those that are doing the tabletop exercise, they're going through this simulation. There's the observers. So I think it's important, like if you only have 4 or 5 employees in your company, it's not a bad idea to bring in a third party to participate as an observer to help fill in the gaps for roles that you might not be able to do by yourself. And then facilitators, which in the case of CCF, and I think we're going to see you at ChannelCon, no foreshadowing here, doing something similar. And then note takers. And I think perhaps the most important role, I think, in a lot of these tabletop exercises is going to be that note taker, because being able to capture emotion, the after actions, and I actually had this thought, like, maybe it's not a bad idea, especially if everybody works remote, to do some using Zoom and record it. And be able to go back and look at some of the emotion and use some of that Zoom AI note taking to help with some of this, because I've done a lot of simulations and I can tell you there have been times where I really felt uncomfortable. Even though I knew it was a simulation, my brain was like, wow, this would be really devastating to our company if those things actually happen.
We record all of our tabletop exercises that we do for clients. And we make those recordings available, but we also use them so that our note taker can go back through and make sure
Sure.
that they captured, occasionally there'll be an offhand comment that we want to come back to, that we want to say, oh, Chris said, that he wouldn't know who to call next. And so we
Right.
can make that an action item. And pulling, the end result of the tabletop, we go through the kind of the lead up actions that happen. We start the incident, we see what the aftermath is going to be, and then it's the lessons learned.
Sure.
So, it's things like, okay, well, we don't have a printed copy of the incident response. So that's an action item coming out of it. We have copies of that that are located in these specific areas. So, making sure that that note taker is really focused. And if you don't have that note taker,
Sure.
record it and then go back and pull the notes yourself. You
Yeah,
can
that's
do this as a one person team if you have to.
Yeah, I like what you said. I think it's really important to remind everybody that the tabletop exercise is kind of like step two or step one and a half. The after action, I think, is something that often gets missed. Like, oh
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
we've referred to our implementation guide or our playbook and we've got this, and like this is just an exercise and it's make believe, pretend. And on Mr. Rogers, everything ends with happy, happy. So like, in the make-believe world, yeah, it can be whatever you want it to be. But when we go back to reality, we got this. And I think that's one of the things I want to point out too. And you and I have talked about this before. Start with simple, start with easy scenarios. Start with like, I understand fully what the scenario that is taking place and impacting our business is right now. It's a possible reality. Now, using things like, oh, well, our MDM would catch that, our XDR would catch that. Those are not okay things to say. Because the reality is, this incident has happened and it's impacting your company. So that means that something else has failed. And to your point of saying the XDR would have caught this, well, it didn't. So what went wrong? So circle that XDR as part of your after action in this conversation to go look like, oh, wait, maybe it was a false positive that's been happening like over and over and over again. But you categorized it wrong. And so, well, yeah, the XDR did catch it. And then you told the XDR system that, nope, you're right. Or I'm right. It's a false positive. You let it through and boom, it's too late. Talk to me a little bit more. I think we touched on this a little bit. We understand the observers, they can ask questions. And I think when we look at CISA, there's lots of questions that can get asked. They put libraries of them and they follow the NIST domains with identify, protect, respond, et cetera. We understand facilitators. That's the role that is like, I'm in starting this, we're making this happen. You're like the dungeon master in D&D. We've talked about the note takers, but I think one that is really important that is easy to get upside down, and we talked about a little bit earlier, is let's talk about the players. Let's talk about the roles that are in this scenario. Talk to me about things like why you would say not have the CEO, or maybe departmentalizing, having smaller tabletops at a department level, or maybe even making it like, hey, it's help desk. I don't care if there's only four people in your company. This is a help desk scenario. We're gonna play that. How do you approach that?
Most IT teams, regardless of their size, feel a little bit more comfortable when you don't throw the C-suite on the first incident response policy, or sorry, the incident response tabletop exercise. There's often a sense by the time that we get to the CEO that everything should run like clockwork. And that's
Of
not
course.
actually the point of a tabletop
Right.
exercise. The point of a tabletop exercise is to break it. And so I would say have one that feels comfortable for your key responders.
Yeah.
So that would be, the people that would be most likely to discover or have to escalate the problem,
Sure.
the people that it would be escalated to, and then any key decision makers. That would have, any outreach to the vendor or any, who's the person that would then be communicating with the rest of the senior leadership team, so that you can kind of test out that segment of it, and then potentially bring in the C-suite folks, the legal representative, the marketing people, whoever else are going to be the enactors of some of those
Sure.
decisions. They can then come in, but leading with a very clear example of the reason that we are doing this. Our IT team has tested the incident response capacity.
Sure.
However, because that cannot exist in a vacuum, it's important that we test this with other decision makers in this process. And then bringing those folks in. And at that point, your IT team has gotten practice. They're a little bit more comfortable with it. And they can kind of show off their skills in front of the C-suite, which always makes IT people happy.
Sure. And
That's
even
the
if you
way I
don't
would
have
approach it.
C-suite, even if you don't have C-suite, is to, if you are the CEO or the owner, take that hat off. Let this play out more from a standpoint of understanding where your bottlenecks are potentially going to come from. If you aren't there, who can make decisions on your behalf? So maybe have someone else play your role in the conversation so that they have to think like, okay, Sarah's not here or Chris isn't here. Like, what do we do? And it reminds me of a story. I'll just give you the high level because I think it's really important because it'll be a, I know it'll be a, an episode later in the year. The after action for a really crazy incident that involved it was not had anything to do with ransomware, but let's just say it involved a car rolling into a building causing flooding. And so like that's the gist of it, right? And I asked the question, I'm like, well, what were the big takeaways? Like you guys, you know, it's a great story, you know, it sounds like a little bit of a fairy tale outcome of like the, you know, everybody wins kind of thing. And he goes, the after action was we procrastinated too long. And I'm like, wow, that's a really big, that's a huge observation to have, especially at the owner or C-suite level to say, we procrastinated. Like when you think about what we're talking about here in a tabletop exercise, every second counts, every minute counts, right? I think that's a really interesting observation. Like, we were too slow in the way we handled the situation. And I think that's a great observation to have, but I think there's also the flip side. I don't necessarily think that it's called procrastination. I think maybe it was like some of the pieces weren't where they needed to be because I also don't want someone to go, I'm calling the attorney.
Don't pull the stop the train chain
Yeah.
for something that might not be required
Oh, it's
for
saying
it.
that we need to patch the system. Got it. Wrong. I was looking at the wrong board. My bad.
Well, and this is one of the reasons why having a chain of escalation is really critical as well, because we can get caught up in, oh, we think that this is a really significant issue, when in reality it might be not, or there might be a valid reason for it that we just didn't know because we're not in the right department or the right
Sure.
team. So, giving people an opportunity to test it out is really the important part of it. I did a tabletop exercise not too long ago, and the client was just like, we haven't seen something like this happen in X number of years. And I did not say it in the moment because it wasn't the right time, but
Sure.
I wanted to say, well, nobody planned for a pandemic with any significance prior to 2020 because that would never happen. And here we are.
And no joke, but like people still have fax machines, and quite honestly, the evolution of the Nigerian prince asking for help still exists both in the form of the fax machine and in every iteration that we see come through via email. So that would tell me that, well, the incident to your organization may be true today. One word change, one sort of slip up, or one sort of like, oh, that looks like a shiny object I should click on. And suddenly the stakes are different than what you thought could ever happen to your organization.
I mean, when we look at like the MGM hack, that was ostensibly by the book. Like nobody was specifically totally blamed,
Right.
like nobody internally. That is a mistake that I would wager over 50%
Would have
of
called. Yeah.
IT help desk
Yeah.
support would have said, oh, no, this is legit.
Yeah.
And
I,
so,
yeah.
It's like we can have all of the best intent in the world. You can have all of the best tools in the world. It doesn't mean that you are you have future proofing for incidents.
So there's two more things I want to cover. One I'll just glaze over. So the facilitation role, I mean, I'm not going to give all the details here. It'll come out again later, I'm sure, for most people. But the facilitation exercise, that part of it is to remind everybody that don't use make-believe scenarios, the skydiver, the shark jumping out of the water, even if it could possibly happen, don't ever start with scenarios that are difficult to approach. I've had some crazy ones happen in my career, both as a tech director and CISO and in other job roles. Sarah, you and I have both experienced some of those together. But there's no fault. There's no dumb suggestions unless you're genuinely trying to be, funny. And then that I think needs to be dealt with because a tabletop exercise, there's a lot of money on the table, right? Like a simulation with all your staff in the room, you're not talking to clients, you're not, prospecting and taking on new leads. This is a internal conversation that you're spending money on your staff to be there. So make sure you make the most of it. And then the second thing that I wanted to talk about, and this is probably what we can use to wrap up this call or this episode, is let's talk about what merits classifying an incident. I think that's one that often gets overlooked and often misused. And we can all laugh about the example of like the phone rings and whoever answers the phone, like, oh yeah, the breach. Yeah, hold on. They're in the conference room talking about it right now. Let me patch you through. Those are not good things to say out loud. But I think more than that, understanding why you shouldn't use that word is where this comes into play, and other words as well.
And this, I would say, is critical in your incident response policy and in your incident response plan, is who is allowed to use that word? Are we training everybody in the company to not use that word and not speak to anybody externally? Do we all understand what an incident constitutes? And an incident can be constituted by different qualifications depending on your organization. But understanding that the term incident means that it is a violation of security policies, either suspected or in truth, and that is different from a breach, because a breach now brings you into responsibilities to other people, responsibilities to the government to report. There are a number of things that means. And this is where a good policy should delineate all of that so that it's right in front of you. Everybody's being educated on what those terms mean and who gets to use them. In many organizations, the only person who can declare an incident is somebody who is at like a director level of IT or the CISO or the CTO. And they limit that to that person specifically to try to avoid those kinds of loop traps that we get caught in when somebody opens their mouth and says a word too early.
So along those lines, I think what we're really getting at today is we're mostly talking about cyber incidents, which would be incident, but like tabletop exercises, if you want to start and not jump all the way to cyber incidents, flooding, storms that, having a server be no longer available because it got flooded with water. That's not what we're referring to when we start talking about security incidents and when we would call out breach. But it doesn't mean you can't start with an incident response plan or talk through your business continuity plans and use some things that maybe are easier to talk through and then build up to doing one that's more cyber specific so that you're not like, hey, I'm going to overwhelm my team by coming in there and saying, hey, let's talk through, ransomware just hit client Acme Corporation and what we do. And they're like, that should never happen because we've done all of these things. And it's like, okay, that's fair. I understand where you're coming from. So let's do one that's more likely to happen from your perspective on round one. Like, so fill in the blank, right? There's plenty to choose.
Still, I mean, I like stolen laptop.
That's a good one.
Particularly if it's a senior leadership, somebody who's got that, like, okay, how do we What is our order of operations if we have a laptop that's reported stolen?
Was it encrypted? Let's check, right? Like you immediately you're like, oh no.
Do you have encryption on it? Awesome. Okay, great. So this is not so much of an incident, but we still need to report it. How do we
Sure.
do the reporting? So you do get to kind of have a cradle to grave with it. We
Definitions
can,
are critical, right? That's I think you just are highlighting some of the things that like, okay, well, what does that mean to report? What are we reporting? What's relevant? Don't share more than you need to.
Exactly. Just because you have a responsibility to report incidents to the DoD within 72 hours is like, does that mean that you report a stolen laptop? Well, that depends. So we get to kind of practice it on smaller areas. Another
What is
one
an
that
asset?
we, yeah. Well, I mean, I file servers. What happens if your file server goes down? That could dovetail into a backup recovery exercise. So
Sure.
you can pick things out that would help improve your security posture without
Response
necessarily
time.
going to the red alert.
Yeah, I like that. I think because again, we're trying to raise the level of maturity with this process and doing a tabletop exercise as opposed to, hey guys, if you want to get lunch today, you're gonna get this right. We know that that's not the goal. We want to see some level of failure and stumbling in this process because that means we're highlighting areas that we need to improve upon. And I can honestly say, like, if you did a tabletop exercise and you really went through the motions and the entire exercise and there really wasn't a lot of change that needs to be made, awesome. Then it's time to mature the exercise to something that's a little bit more difficult than the one you just went through.
Well, and if you're not revamping it on a regular basis, you're not staying current with your tech stack, you're not staying current with your processes.
Sure.
So this
It's
is
a
not a one and done by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, I think that's a good place to just wrap this up. Sarah, any last thoughts to share with the audience before we send them on their way late in the week?
Look at tabletop exercises as an opportunity for exploration and growth, as opposed to you have to be perfect.
Understood.
Because there's always lessons learned. There are always business opportunities that come up as a result of it. When we look at it as what can we learn about ourselves and how can we grow, it becomes an amazing process.
Sarah, well said, and thank you for being on the show. For those of you listening, this has been an episode of 1337. Thanks, and have a great week.